Well, it's certainly a timely experiment, if I may use that word. To when the human is the company, and to sort of find out what those lines are, particularly in the U.S., where we're having an identity crisis, as to ever since Citizens United and now with Hobby Lobby, not entirely clear on the difference between a corporation and a human being. Many of us are still pretty clear on that, or at least we feel we are. But the law doesn't appear to be clear on that anymore, at least not with the present sitting Supreme Court. So, I mean, that alone, in terms of, I mean, I'm having this sort of debate back and forth in my blog with this IP attorney as to how you would address Hobby Lobby without affecting free speech, and it's interesting. There's no question. Certain rights are afforded corporations, and should be, and yet certain restrictions are there as well, and those are meant to protect the individuals. I don't know larger picture what your overall plans will be, how this will evolve, but it'd be very interesting to start to think about a person in corporate terms. How I mean, I've been around corporate communications a very long time, and how things are sort of assessed, which is a different language and a different approach. It's not how we think of our lives usually. Some people do, but for example, who, if you're a corporation, who are your customers? How do you intend to grow that customer base? What are your resources? You're doing that to a great extent, but even to talk about that, and in fact, I'll ask you that, as a corporation, who do you consider your customers to be?
Well, I look at things, well, I mean, what I started to do when I began this was looking at everything I do and trying to see the value of it, and then trying to see whether it was an exchange, a mutual exchange, whether I got something in return, or whether it was something that I constantly felt like if it was an engagement with somebody and it just felt emotionally draining or energy, or how much do I do where it was like I should be paid for this. Not even, and not to say that it should be a monetary. I give you my time and you give me money, but to think about the values of exchange and the give and take between things. So a lot of times I do things and I have done things and it's either been for free or the idea was just taken, and that's something I've had to accept. And it gets to a point, I think I said in the, I don't know if you read the We Make Money Not Art article.
I didn't.
Okay. Well, in that one I said, it could be with a friend, and this friend really, always needs my advice and always needs my compassion or consoling or help solving problems. But whenever I need that person's never there. And so in those kinds of circumstances, it sounds quite ridiculous, but how far might we need to go and say, listen, I can't give you my time anymore. My time is too valuable. My ideas, the way I look at the world, the way I, from my experiences, I know how to deal with your problem. And take it to that extreme and say, okay, but that's going to cost you unless you give me some of what you've learned. And so it's ironic, and it's it is extreme, but it's to say, like, what, how do we begin to put a value on our past and what we learn and how through our individual perspectives see the world, and how can we turn this into something to be supported rather than just time labor, which I think would be more valuable if people thought deeply or a bit more considerably about how their lives evolve. And I think, I guess maybe this comes from being in New York and watching a lot of people particularly my father, like kind of just working along, and then not until really the end, because he passed away, sort of taking a moment and looking back on his life and looking at, reflecting on things that he kind of just, you know, pushed under the rug and didn't consider. And then, unfortunately, a lot of lost moments or probably more valuable circumstances could have been enjoyed. So it is a bit of like meaning of life or savoring, appreciating life, and the thing that we each have or that's so unique is how we see with our two eyes or sense the world and how it makes us feel and all the experiences that we have to go to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very valuable. And if we take a bit more time, I mean, to reflect on these things, it could change also how we treat each other. Also, you know, purpose in life instead of just consuming life. Like, what can you actually offer from what you learn and what you go through?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, it. You know, that you are sort of entering the matrix, as you were. You're taking this extreme path that, with a hope to actually, it sounds like, learn something about every, in a way, everything that is antithetical to what the digital age is providing. Or creating. You know, my blog is called The Illusion of More for a reason. You know, you mentioned, I mean, it does feed this kind of mass consumption. It obviates the need to slow down. It obviates the need to sort of consume things, even if those things are information, in a more thoughtful way. You know, and that's sort of the premise of what I write about, is whether or not, you know, that we've certainly got the more part that was promised 20 years ago. Whether or not that's doing us any good is worth asking.
Yes.
And you know, it sounds like to a certain extent you're asking some of the same questions, but you're taking a far more bold step to find out, going on sort of a space journey.
Yeah,
As it were. And I want to go back on something you said a little while ago, because you alluded to a notion that maybe somewhere in all this is, because we were talking about value, actual value, correct? And that somewhere in all this is some potential for people to either make supplementary income or whatever through harnessing the value in their data, which to me sounds, you know, it echoes things that Jaron Lanier is talking about in his book, Who Owns the Future? Is that, do you find those things correspondent, or is that something you're familiar with?
I definitely identified with what Lanier said. There were some, but it's speculative. It's easy to... That's why I felt like I had to do this real, even if it's just an experiment, even if it's just to make a statement or to be the subject and object of a reappropriation of how things are, to say, well, I don't know what the solution is, but what happens when we move in this direction, or if I move in this direction, and... Would just even the act of becoming a corporation or trying to cut myself off and making something available for other people to cut off their information to other servers, would this, you know, provoke government to create new regulations or laws or benefits? The fact is that there is monetary value in the information. And that is because we exist in an economy that has a currency, or we have currencies. So as long as they're there is that way that we exchange, then the supplemental possibility of it is worth looking at, but it can also be abused. So I don't think there's a, you know, a golden solution. It's of course, you know, okay, well, if people do this and that's more valuable data, but it's not actually very good behavior, what's that going to do?
Right.
Like somebody with a criminal record, actually that's very expensive information. So what is that going to support, and how, you know, when people, that's why I don't, it's a very, very complicated subject, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I want to make sure I understand one aspect of your project. Because I think you mentioned on your website sort of biological services, which read more like, more or less like, you know, blood donation, you know, or am I reading that accurately? Is that sort of one of the services, if you will, of Jennifer Lynn Marone Inc. And if so, why did you? Because I understand that it's tied to data, but it is something.
It's both. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not.
it's both. Like, what is the value of this as information, and what is the value of it to help somebody? So that's why I'm trying to, like, in the beginning of the website, it says really the value of a person to society and as data. And this again goes in two directions. You know, I'm trying to assess the whole value, so I can't obviously leave out the body and the way it works and all the things that are really valuable that it produces, like blood and, you know, reproductive system, and things that actually I feel that we take for granted when we're healthy, in a, you know, growing up in a very ambitious driven, career-driven society, especially as a woman, you put things off, and you're told, actually, I mean, men can maybe not understand that women are born with a certain amount of resources, and those diminish, and then that's it. And we see it increasingly, you know, IVF treatment needed, surrogates or egg donations, blood. So there are two basically buyers. One is maybe for free, and one is for, you know, you get paid for it. So there's research, pharma, and, you know, developing cures, and within science, and then there's people that need these things. So saving lives or creating lives or helping others. And one, the science-related research, one pays, and the other one doesn't. And I find that a bit, not to say that the people in need should pay, but in the end, they're both trying to create a healthier or create, make a life possible. We all know, but it's not talked about, that ultimately your body is what you have left and what you have to draw from, and is used by many people in wide range of societies and cultures for when they're in need. And it takes a few searches on the internet and you can find people saying, where can I sell my kidney? There's even a doctor saying, I'll help you sell your kidney. And it's often to pay for somebody else's, you know, misfortune. And then, you know, the egg donation in the UK, you're only allowed to be compensated for a certain amount. And in the US, it's all like open game. Depends on how well you're educated, your age, where you grew up, your race, what you look like. So these are markets that exist. Yeah. And then blood donations, or whether it's clinical trials, again, the quality of your heart rate. I did a bit of research. I started to do a clinical trial for a drug in the beginning of the year. I didn't go through because I had some other commitments that it wouldn't have worked well with. And you know, they wanted the condition of my heart for the study, and it was almost impossible to get my own information. They didn't understand why I was even asking for it, and they were so hungry for, you know, people to do this and healthy patients, that they almost didn't even let me leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also interesting to see the other people doing it, because it's like a new form of labor. The rest of the people, there was even like a medical student doing it. He said he wanted to raise some money because he's going on a sailing trip. There was a girl, you know, just quite normal, nice, you know, not, it's not like one would expect. You have to be healthy to mm-hmm. do these things. Right. It almost felt like the new reality TV show. And then you just like lie in this bed for days. And this is becoming, apparently, a new form of getting income.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not talked about. This is, you know, some people pay for, live off of this.
Sure. It immediately conjures, I mean, maybe it's a little dystopian on my part, but it immediately conjures an image of sort of the millennial generation
mm-hmm.
acting as guinea pigs for the boomer generation.
Yeah. Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, given the fact that the boomers are the, certainly in America anyway, the largest, wealthiest, and longest mm-hmm. lived population in global history.
Yeah.
And the millennials can't find work.
Yep. And how do we keep them? How do we keep them going?
Yes.
Yeah, and we're also, you know, a lot of people in the boomers generation, and they don't want to leave their jobs. You know, so there's a big imbalance, I think, as well. But yeah, no, it's something that I. It was a bit unsettling, to say the least. And I'm just, I mean, that by making that list, I wasn't able to convey all that I just said in that, but I think there'll be opportunities to do so.
It's funny, I just got this notion of Jennifer Marone writing her own blog, if you will.
Yeah.
As the employee of Jennifer Marone Inc.
Yes.
And an opportunity, giving you an opportunity to talk about how you're feeling personally.
Yes.
Which is a completely separate thing than CEO of the company. No.
Yeah, that's exactly what I
intended to
be doing. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Because that's, I think, a big part of how, the division of self.
Hmm.
And then how does this part feel about what this part is doing?
If you complain about your boss on Facebook, will you get fired?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. It also be. Yeah, no, it's. I think it will be fun. A bit silly. I mean, it's all a game.
Yeah, but it's an interesting one. It's a very interesting one.
No, but it's everything. You know, sometimes to have that perspective, and ultimately to have fun, I think is a big mission, part of the, not to have fun, but I think that need a bit more humor.
Absolutely.
In these serious debates.
I couldn't agree more.